SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews,
taking you inside the sport of kings. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A good Thursday morning, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And even though I didn't check with Casey, I think we're still running the... Is that what we're doing, Case, right? We're still running the previous day's stream starting now on the stream. So, should have that straight for you starting next week. And got to start the morning with the just deflating and sad news that emerged yesterday afternoon about Midnight Bourbon, and something seemingly colic style related, gastro. Intestinal issue that came up on Sunday, and just that quick. Very, very tough. The necropsy will probably yield more answers. There's so many things that can go wrong down there as amazing as they are, they don't have much of a boiler system. That digestive system of theirs is problematic. It gets twisted up, can get impacted, and they hemorrhage, and just that quick, and tensions that. And a million things popped in my head when I saw this. Even before I saw the more extensive, the coverage, Marty McGee, with a piece, and until they get a necropsy, they don't have a whole lot of idea. I don't know if you saw it. Chuck Simon had a multi-post thread essentially where he recounted a very similar scenario of a horse working out had not given any indication of anything, and after workout was in distress and acting colicky, and they tried all kinds of things to get him settled, finally got him to the clinic, and all they knew was that he was bleeding internally, and they managed to not sure he didn't just survive, he became a nice horse. Chuck didn't mention the horse, but I'm pretty sure I know who it is. And he went on to have a great career. But colitis. There's different colitises that's generally something that you have a fighting chance against, though. Although I think about something like colitis X, but that's they can try to rally, and dehydration becomes an issue. But this this one really kind of devastated. You can tell the fan base, because this was a horse that actually seemed to win more fans by not winning, right? All the good tries, the good hard tries, and the elite company that he consistently kept, and of course you don't know. You go back to that Haskell. You start rooting for a horse like that because you want to get him over the top. You want him to win a Grade One, that kind of thing. And terrible send along. Thoughts for the barn, obviously, for the whole Asmussen team, Scott Blasi and Dave Fisk and Ron Winchell and the horse like this, a stable star, and of course they've got plenty of stable stars, but when you've got a horse like this that targets all the biggest, possible assignments, in glamour divisions, in the three-year-old glamour division, two-year-old glamour division, international opportunities, etc. They become a real, they're pampered and they're, they're doted on. And so, a tough one. Tough one to... A lot of people just, and, just like that, they're gone. I mean, that's, they're fragile. They're ridiculously fragile, actually. We've said it over so many different backdrops. How can something that strong and powerful and swift and with all the attributes that they've got, there are so many design flaws that it's mind-boggling. The spindly legs, that digestive system. There's that little duck pin brain that can make them their own worst enemy. the ones that the way who was it that originally said that they're born and they spend the rest of their lives trying to kill themselves. They're amazing, and that's why you they're held in the esteem they are, and also to some degree why they're as mysterious as they are. Some cheerier. Let's turn to cheerier pieces of news and topics. And yesterday at OBS Day 2, another pair of seven-figure sellers, one by a familiar and veteran sire in Medaglia d'Oro, the $1,750,000. Macmur Hall bred that went to Red Baron Barn and Rancho Temescal, who have been really very active, and not just this week already, but they really have kind of stepped up in terms of particularly West Coast operation, and this is one that Nick DeMerck consigned, was a $325,000 yearling at Keeneland, and led the charge yesterday. He had a first crop sire in Mendelssohn, first seven-figure seller for a first crop stallion. This is a colt bred by Marcus Stables. And congratulations, Dave Scanlon. Sent Dave a note. This one's going to disappear from view. And Mitsu Nakachita. In fact, Nakachita with the next two biggest knockdowns with the $1.3 million colt, and then came back with a $825,000, actually happened a little earlier in the day, that Alan Poindexter bred. This also Nick DeMerck. And $825,000 for the Into Mischief colt out of Game for More, hip 466. This one, nice, basically doubling of money. $385,000 yearling. And the Mendelssohn was a $235,000 yearling that... actually had a whole string of that was a horse that went through. This is the fourth ring that that Mendelssohn colt had been through. Curlin, $800,000 colt out of Hard Not to Like. This was another nice pinhook score, $285,000 RNA, actually, originally. But Michael Lund Peterson, Donato Lani signing the ticket. So those were the big boy numbers. And then you had our friends at DJ Stable, the Greens. The Shadwell bred Nyquist filly, $700,000. And Nyquist, in fact, I might even segue here, because Nyquist, there's another, I took some notes. Nyquist, in fact, here it is right here. I'm going to give you a couple of these pieces. The Nyquist numbers are astounding. And every one that was available these first 2 days has sold. There were a couple of outs. But here are the purchase prices of the Nyquists so far. And McCathen has been a big part of this. $250,000. This was day one. $325,000. $200,000. And then yesterday, three more. $700,000. This one to DJ. $200,000 to Oracle. And $115,000, Doug O'Neill signing for Alejandro Mercado. So six Nyquists, and looks like three fillies and, or four, it looks like four colts and two fillies, and the average has been $300,000 for the Nyquists. And there's four more that'll sell today and tomorrow. And on that front, this does shape up. The numbers yesterday compared to a year ago, another outstanding day. But what is left on the docket today and tomorrow really sets up for a huge sale. There's the Bolt Doro story. Just that seems to be the spring's most notable results. With each passing day, selling 2-year-olds, 12 for 13 so far. Only one RNA. The out of 13 hips. And only one out so far. There's another out from day four. And that's a good sign. One thing that you see, these horses breeze and some come out, a little hinky out of the breeze. A lot of times they'll wait for, an opportunity down the road. These are all going through the ring, and they're selling. 12 out of 13 in 2 days for $1.7 million or so. So averaging easily $150,000. In fact, yeah, that's probably about right. There's been a couple of smaller sellers, but $450,000, $150,000, $360,000, $60,000, $120,000, $250,000, $110,000, $185,000. The Bolt Oros are in demand, and there's another eight of them yet to sell. There's nine more Always Dreamings. Always Dreaming, who had been heavily anticipated and is selling steadily. Not huge numbers necessarily, but they're selling. 50,000, 75, 100, 245. Just nice, consistent seller. So there'll quite a few more Always Dreamings. There's seven more Into Mischiefs yet to sell, three more Curlins, seven Mendelssohns, and eight Justifies. And these have been the engine on the train here halfway in. Cloud computing, actually. Cloud computing is an interesting story. And, you know, given that his name is in the news with Seth Klarman and Chad Brown, you know, basically considering early voting for the cloud computing treatment, bypassing potentially Derby and going on. But there's only been one cloud computing sell so far, and that was yesterday a Philly that Best of Luck Farm consigned. This a Maryland bred, and Todd Mosteler, Commonwealth New Era Racing and Partners, $195,000. So the cloud computings haven't even really had a chance. It's random. It's based on how the mares and alphabetically and how it works. So it just so happens that there's a bunch of the cloud computings, a dozen of them, selling today and tomorrow. So watch for that as a potential story. Couple of quick things that caught my eye, because you know I love offbeat sales stories and breeding stories. There were two alternations in the sale, and a filly will sell today, Hip 407. 407 sold yesterday. The 780 sells today. Alternation filly out of Miss Sparkles, Florida bred. But Bobby Dodd sold one to Steve Landers yesterday. $250,000. And it worked nicely. 10-3. This is the one that worked a quarter. 21-3. And it had to be the family. I looked at the family. The mare was okay. She made $125,000. Placed in the Monrovia. She's had a nice produce record, but not exceptional. She's had a bunch of winners of two wins, three wins. It's got to be a standout individual, this colt. And I imagine seeing Steve Landers' name on the buyer line, this one probably goes to Brad Cox. So alternation. Who's it? Darby Dan? Darby Dan, I think. Right? I think Darby Dan. A few other notables. There's some American Pharaohs yet. There's only been two so far, and they sold nice, of course, 340 and 250. And there's another five to sell. So, you know, there's probably $1 million worth of bloodstock. You know who's sold nicely, and haven't had a chance to talk to John Sakura, but Army Mule, with his first sellers, he's sold 9 out of 10. There was one Army Mule colt that has RNA'd. But everybody else sold through. 9 out of 10, you know, for nice numbers, including the $375,000 colt that breezed a quarter, John Fort, spending his Tawny Port money. $375,000. Tommy Town also, yesterday, bought the filly. For 140, two nice sellers. The rest are, you know, mainline, 30,000, 47, 80, 10, 13, 12, 40,000. Army Mule having nice numbers. Awesome Slew. The Awesome Slew story continues. Another one yesterday, six figures. $125,000, Mike Rapoli, Jacob West bought from Ocala Stud. It stands for $4,000, Awesome Slew. And he's had a $50,000, a $125,000, and a $220,000 And that's it. That's the only three that were available. There was one RNA. One RNA, a Colt early on Tuesday. We told you about Boltoro. I'm just going through my highlights here. I told you cloud computing is going to sell a bunch. Curlin has sold three. 510, 600,000, and 800,000. Yeah, three offered and none for less than $500,000. So bring your checkbook and partner up. Having a notable sale with just a handful of opportunities, Free Drop Billy. How about that? 230, 85, 67, 95. There's another, looks like three or four Free Drop Billies today and tomorrow. Good start. Gervin, who we talked about with Jess Martini yesterday. Interesting. Track and follow, as they say. I told you there's quite a few. Seven Into Mischiefs yet to sell. Justifies a bunch. That'll light up the chart. Alphabetically. The Mendelssohn is clearly going to be one of the big ones. But how about a $350,000 mizzen mast yesterday? Dana Bernhardt off of Kieran Dunn that breezed in Philly that went 20-3. That caught my eye. And Nyquist, we already told you, $300,000 on average. Unbelievable. There's a bunch of practical jokes yet to sell. Ransom the Moon. How about Ransom the Moon with, three six-figure sellers. $190,000, $160,000, $120,000. Ransom the Moon. And the race day. Race day lands two in the Derby. And because you'll have to go to Korea to get him, $475,000 yesterday early on. That was the Longoria sale. They had they were part of the nice storylines coming out of yesterday. $475,000 to the Maverick Sienna Commonwealth micro share concept. Watch for that one. How about Uncaptured? Here's another one. Uncaptured. Every Uncaptured that's been offered has sold. 140, 200, 70, 125, 102, and 32,000. And the 32,000 caught my eye because I think it's our friend Jack D'Amico from Atlanta who's been working tirelessly to try to get parimutuel wagering into Georgia. So good luck to Jack. Eddie Plisa buying that one for Jack, and I'm sure some partners and friends, and they would love to be able to watch that horse in Georgia and bet that horse from Georgia. So there it is. There's because I know tomorrow we'll dive into weekend preview. So I did want to get, we're 50% into the sale, and I did want to hit the highlights and back for day three. In about an hour, they will start. So all the anticipation of a banner sale seems to be clearly coming to fruition. All right? So we'll watch, and then we'll probably talk to, yeah, I know we will, because we do every year, Gary Young, when we get to Churchill, and Gary gets, a lot of times the sale is in that first week of the 2 weeks leading into Derby. So I wonder if Gary's going to come straight to Louisville or if he'll go home to, he might go home to California first. So we'll see when I'll reach out to him after the proceedings today. All right, let me get a couple of things lined up here. And that includes a visit with Michael Blowen, I've been promising. And I you know what, I want to get the visit in. For a couple of reasons, I don't want any more of the old friends to you know, reach the Rainbow Bridge. There's been one, two, at least three over the winter, and winter's tough. Winter's tough on older horses, and the passing of Zippy Chippy certainly caught a lot of people's. He caught a lot of people's imagination. There's no doubt, and it's funny because some people wrote to me and said, "Oh, it, you know, that was 100 losses. Why would they go on with him?" I mean, Michael's got particular, you know, particular understanding with Felix Montserrat. It became it became a point of pride running him and not winning. he was an attraction. Come on, he was. It would have taken if he had won his 47th start. Would he be as beloved and as storied? Right, he was better off not winning. So we'll appreciate and not just obviously not just we'll talk about everything went on in the winter, and of course. You know, so when you talk about sudden passing, the fact that Medina Spirit has been laid to rest at Old Friends. So we'll get Michael in. We're going to visit with Dick. Dick is feeling all right. He sent me a note and said rested up quite a bit yesterday, feels much better. And it's important that we get to Dick because it's the big card at Sha-Tin. So we'll talk to Dick as well. I want to get Sean, because he's got a big weekend, as mentioned yesterday. Oh, and speaking of which, I may have reached out. It turns out I may have reached for Bill Gallo 24 hours too soon, because I got off the air yesterday and all of a sudden. Well, I should go to the email. I got an email from Guy Torsiglieri at Far Hills. And they've got nice news. The purse account, the purse monies, after obviously, you know, taking hits, you know, it's a charitable undertaking. But in kind of a positive sign that, you know, that as Bill was indicating yesterday, the Far Hills race meet is restoring $100,000 into the purse. So $250,000 for this fall's race meet. And for the Grand National. Very cool. And of course, you know, as we explained with Guy and really with any of the Chase guests, Bill Gallo and Sean, etc., and Joe, there, particularly with Guy, though, I mean, there had been that build-up to the 100th running of Far Hills, and Guy had worked literally for 10 years, probably more, the goal was to have $1 million day, $1 million worth of purses at the 100th meeting. And COVID, as it did to so many, you know, events of any ilk, not just KO'd that, but, you know, set things back. I mean, the Grand National had approached $500,000 in purses. So Guy and the team at Far Hills are going to rebuild that, and $250,000 Grade One Grand National, which very frequently decides the championship. Amongst the chasers. So Very happy for Guy, but it's just too bad. It's kind of funny that they were hoping actually to get that news out the day before, which would have been then perfect. But I wasn't aware of this, so my reaching Bill was ostensibly because they had reworked the website and really because this weekend, as I explained with him yesterday, and he detailed, this is kind of a kickoff to the middle portion of the season, to the late spring, early summer season. So and you know what was fun yesterday? There was a big response to the craziest thing. There was a big response to the topic of steeplechase years ago at Aqueduct. And some followers, including Jonathan Barnes, he put out a couple of different topics and put up a picture of, I forget which, let me see. It was the 1949 wind photo, winning the Sea Skipper, June 25th, 1949. Proceed. With Dooley Adams, Hall of Famer. Very cool. So that captured people's imagination. It was kind of nice. But I was very happy for Guy with that news. All right. A couple of things on the race track. How about Gus yesterday? Comes in late from the bullpen. And what did he do? He promised you, or at least offered you, the opportunity at a best bet. Kobe B! That was great. And happy for Dale Romans. Dale loses this horse, gets claimed away, but for $30,000. But nice win. And a horse, actually, that Tammy owned with Brary Jones. And Kobe B., resoundingly, I mean, one off by half a dozen lengths. $20 winner. So those of you that jumped aboard with Gus, it was a as usual, it was another tricky run at Keeneland. The pick five, 12,000. Yeah. Every day there wasn't a monster price winner, right? It was kind of middle priced long shots like this, 9-1. I mean, that's $20 is sort of the cutoff point, right? Yeah, $20. And you had the $9 winner, Camp Hope, who was obviously one of the ones in that seventh. That the seventh ended, it's funny, we were so eager to find a price in the seventh, and then what happens, of course, the three favorites ran 1-3-2, but they were decent prices. But they were the three favorites: Camp Hope, Beacon Hill, and TD Dance. So McPeak, a winner, Walking L Thoroughbreds with this Summer Front colt. And it was a good, it was exciting. I mean, the three of them were almost inseparable at the wire. So it was a good, the race was as competitive as we thought. It just, unfortunately, for those that were reaching for prices. And really, after the top three, I guess that Street Ready, actually, at 36-1 was not, it ran all right, was attending the pace, and the pace setter, which was that Wesley Ward invader, who ended up basically dropping anchor. But that was probably the best effort among the prices, who finished, I think, fifth, sixth. The winner of the nightcap, that Lapis Lazuli, who also you had both Gus and Seth. And I put up the link, and they both liked Lapis Lazuli, and you got 1740. Yeah, no, it was worth playing yesterday. There was no complete head scratcher, essentially, right? So good job if you got through there. And in Indiana, after the fireworks on opening day, things kind of settled back down to a more reasonable set of winners. And you had some short prices that came in, but did have 5-1. You had Ray Paquette with Sammy Bermudez for a $12 winner, and I think Brad Cox won a pair, right? Yeah, Brad Cox won a pair. You know what was funny? That Kaylee's sister plays music, who looked like a slam dunk in that sixth race, and got bet. I mean, it's not that she didn't get bet, but because she was 3-5. But I looked around later, and very few people. Everybody played against her, and sometimes you look and you think, all right, this horse doesn't have to win. She looked like she had to win. I mean, that's the way it looked. I will mention one other element here that happened again yesterday, and that was you had two first-time starters in the two maiden races, in both the 7th and the 8th, and this is the second day. I mean, I know it's early in the meet, but you've had firsters basically beat those with experience. And, you know, those with experience have been generally coming off layoffs, you know, obviously, particularly in the Indiana bred races. But that Tapadera for Randy Klopp, and that one had, you know, was second choice. I mean, only paid $560, but that one did have, pedigree to win. And so did Irish Tap, the Randy Klopp, the one the 8th, had some sibling power. So take a close look at the firsters here next week when we come back. We'll come back for week two at Indiana. Right now, I hear in the background Michael Blowen standing by. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to talk to you,
Michael. Well, and I had to reach out to you because I honestly, with each passing this winter, I said, "Ooh, I should call Michael Blowen," and then I waited, and then another older family member of old friends, and now finally, Zippy Chippy, and I said, "All right, I got to get Michael on here."
Zippy Chippy. You know, they called Zippy Chippy the lovable loser. Well, he was a loser, but he wasn't too lovable, I'll tell you that much. Well, if you lost 100 races, you might not be in the best mood ever either. And if you had to work for Felix, Steve, Zippy Chippy, if people don't remember, lost 100 races. He was over 100. He was trained by Felix Montserrat. I think 3 races in a row, he just stayed in the gate, and nobody was listening to him. He kept saying, you know, I really don't like this job. He's trying to pass that along, but nobody got the message. And so he grew into a grouchy old man, and the only person that could really deal with him was Joanne and a few of the volunteers up at Cabin Creek. And the other interesting thing is, of course, he raised a ton of money for us because, you know, people liked his story and they appreciated him and all that. But he's the only horse Old Friends ever paid for. We had to pay $5,000 to Felix and sign all these complicated legal documents because he says, you know, this doesn't include the rights to his wife to make a movie out of it because Walt Disney already owns that. So, But Zippy meant a lot to us, and he just came with so many stories. I remember being, I believe, I can't remember whether it was Great Barrington or the Three County Fair in Northampton.
Northampton, I think.
One, Northampton. I even forget what start it was. It was like 94 or 95. And he finished second. And the horse who finished third had a claim of foul against the horse who finished first. And it was a legitimate claim, and it looked like they were gonna take the winner down and put Zippy up. And Felix, his trainer, Felix Monterey, started climbing up one of those old gatehouses where they had the stewards that looked like guard towers from an old World War II movie. He starts climbing up screaming, he can't win this way, can't win this way. So they didn't put him up. But it's the only time I've ever seen a trainer start screaming that he didn't want his horse put up. You can't make it. That's one of the things that makes it such a great sport, right, Steve?
Well, exactly. I made the point that when you were going to be on, and having heard from some people and seen some comments about, why did they persevere with him? And I made the point that if he had been, 1 for 47, he wouldn't be as famous, and he would not have been, such a cause celeb.
Yes, because, as much as we like to cash tickets with winners, most of us are losers. So there's more people that could identify with Zippy than identify with Silver Charm, I'm sure.
In addition, because I do want to touch on everything that happened over the winter, and then we'll circle around to Medina, but we've got to also bring up a firm success as well.
Oh, man. He was unbelievable. I adored that horse, and he was really, he's one of the toughest horses, the toughest living things I've ever been around, and he was so sweet. He always had, trouble with his feet. He had his own podiatrist, but he accomplished something that no other horse I don't think has ever accomplished. And I asked Andy Beyer about this one day, because he had 42 starts, and he had 38 triple-digit buyers. 38 out of 42. Now they make a big deal if you get two or three. But he was, what a trooper. And the other great thing, I love listening to Richard Migliore on your show. I think he's really, really terrific. And he was at Keeneland one day, I don't know how many years ago, a long time ago, 7 or 8 years ago. And he had four mounts, three of them were odds on, and one was 5-2, and he finished out of the money out of three of them, and finished third on the other one. And I'd never met him, and after the races were over, I saw he's going back to the jockey room, and I interrupted him, and I introduced myself, and I said, Richard, I have two of your great horses at my farm. He goes, who do you have? I said, I have Hidden Lake and A Firm Success. And he says, you do? And he says, can I go see him? And he got changed. We came out to the farm, and he didn't leave until you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And he told me that took pictures of him with both of them, and he said, he said, coming out here, he said, really made a difference. He says, he took one of the worst days of my life and turned it into one of the best ones. So these horses still do amazing things for people. Just amazing. No, hey, yeah, A Firm Success was just one of a kind. He was just so unique. He raced forever. He raced every time. He never threw one in. He was always extremely competitive, and just a real, real, real great tribute to his breed, I'll tell you.
Well, and I got to get, got to have you pay tribute as well to Alphabet Soup and Popcorn Delights even as well. These were the four that, it seemed like every month there was one name that we had to pay tribute to.
It's really, really, it was really hard. I mean, Alphabet Soup, it was hard in one way, but he'd been through so much. And, he recovered from cancer. He had some experimental work done, and that saved his life about 6 years ago, 7 years ago now. And he survived, and he was friends with the little donkey, Gorgeous George. And he was so kind and so generous, and he'd always come to the fence to greet his fans and get his picture taken. And he seemed to really, really enjoy himself. But he didn't leave anything on the table. I've never regretted euthanizing a horse too soon. But I don't think we've ever done that. I've always worried about doing it too late, because I have done that, and. And because of the great veterinarians at Rude and Riddle and Dr. Waldron, Dr. Broman and everybody, I think we did him a big favor at the end. So it was peaceful, but it was tough because he was just a really, really good friend. And you know, he had the stall. He'd come in at night, and Silver Charm and he would both come in at night, and they had neighboring stalls, and they used to look around, and for a couple of days, Silver Charm kept looking around and wondering where he was. So, you know, that was sad. And then, of course, Popcorn Delights, who was one of the horses that played Seabiscuit in the movie, was a huge fan favorite. Everybody loved to see him, and it's just one of the strange things is we still have his father. We still have his sire, Afternoon Delights, at the farm, and I think Afternoon Delights is 29 or 30 now, and he survived all of his, he's surviving his offspring now. And But Popcorn Delights was very healthy till the very end, so that was good. But yeah, that's the tough part of the job. You think you'd get used to it. You know, we buried over 100 horses here, and you'd think you'd get used to it a little bit, but you just don't, because you get so attached to them. And people say you should make them pets, but that's what we do. So, you know, it's like losing your pets, and they all have different personalities. They all have different, you know, they're all so different. That's one of the amazing things that I've learned about on this job. When I used to, was just betting them, and I still bet them, but you know, they'd be numbers and all this, and you'd handicap and all that. But, you know, to get to know them as individuals is a real pleasure. And I have to say, one of the great things that's happened over the last couple of weeks is that, Shadwell's, donated all their retired stallion stocks, along with a serious endowment and a Ford 150. And so I've got Swain in a paddock right next to Silver Charm. And I went back and I watched the Dubai World Cup. I think it was in 90. It was at 98 or 99 when he and Silver Charm finished in a photo in the Dubai World Cup. And now they're in my backyard. I mean, and they're pals. you know, you can't make it up, Steve.
No, that's wonderful. And for those that had not seen this news is only a couple of weeks old, really. It happened near the end of March. Albertus Maximus, Karawan, Intadab, Mustanfar, Damani, and Swain. Unbelievable. And certainly, you know, certainly for international visitors, I imagine, you know, there's going to be, you know, real appeal, Michael. I mean, how many international-based types have made their way to you?
Well, not very many. One of our first horses that we brought home from Japan was Creator. And he was the European Creator, not the American one. And he was ridden by Cash Asmussen and won some big group ones over there. And he drew quite a crowd from across the planet. And I think the same thing is going to happen with these animals. And the other thing I'd like to point out is, I know it's hard sometimes. You're moving horses that are 30 and 31 years old, and the saying goes, you know, tough to move an old horse because they're used to everything. But every one of these horses came off the trailer in perfect condition and went right out, and it's like they didn't miss a beat, and they were treated so well over there. Every one of these stallions has no, they're not aggressive. They're just, they like seeing the people around. They're not afraid of anything. I mean, they're just, they were so well taken care of over there. It's really astounding to get a group of stallions like that and have them all be so kind. It's just amazing.
Well, and more, you know, more attractions, and you can't help yourself. You keep growing, and you're constantly in expansion mode, which is to your credit. and this is obviously over the years has gotten bigger than you ever possibly could have imagined, and you've carved out this, you know, this amazing legacy and this, you know, this niche as a, attraction. And you know, there's people, we got to include this in the conversation, Michael, because over the next couple of weeks leading up to Derby and your open house annually, and there's going to be people that, you know, are going to set their itinerary, and if they've never been, or if they come every year or twice a year, and of course with Keeneland going on, you got Keeneland visitors that swing out to see you on the dark days, or, you know, as part of their race day activities. So, you know, the timing perfect to, you know, kind of set the stage for the upcoming open house. You've been getting a ton of publicity, and I saw that nice piece. In fact, I was going to talk about this Maggie Mendersky, anyway. She came out and spent time with Silver Charm, who has inherited the mantle as the oldest Derby winner after the passings of Grindstone and Gopher Gin. But she also had a feature for people that didn't see the CJ yesterday, the Courier-Journal. She has got this terrific feature going back to 1922. The unearthing and the debut of essentially a silent feature, a silent film. It's quite something that, for those that haven't seen it, and it's going to be available also at the Derby Museum. This caught my eye, and then I saw that she had been out to see you for Silver's birthday.
Yeah, she's a really, really good rider, and she was. She spent a lot of time, and she made a couple of visits. I mean, she's really good, and I'm really proud. And she wrote a great article about Silver Charm, because it is Silver Charm's 25th anniversary of his victory in the Preakness in the Derby and the Preakness, and not the Belmont. We have Touch Gold too, but. And he's right next door to Silver Charm, too. But they don't hold grudges, which is one of the great things about having horses instead of people. You know, but Maggie did a wonderful job. And you know, Steve, I just got back from where you were. I just got back from Oaklawn Park. And I'd never been there before. And based on your recommendation, I read David Hill's book, The Vapors, which is fabulous. In fact, I read it twice. And I had a great time. And Lewis Matthews, who's the president of the Arkansas Breeders, asked me to go down and give the talk for the breeders' meeting, and it was great. And we had a room overlooking the track in that hotel and the casino. And you know, you get 12 simulcasting stations on your TV in your room. You can get room service to deliver the racing form. I mean. And I had dinner with Mr. Sella, and they were doing a great thing with the Hall of Famers. So I got to meet Lafitte and Ty for the first time, and Chris McCarron was there, and Bill Boland, and Don Brunfeld, and Jose Santos, and Edgar Prado. And I coerced Edgar to come to the farm to see his two classic winners. And so it was a wonderful, wonderful trip, and we had a great time. And I understand why you like going there, too. One of the funny things is, you know,
there's
that
something very
house,
special about it.
Pancake House. There's a pancake house downtown, and you have to wait in line outside because it's always so crowded. Well, they gave us a seat right in the way in the back, and Diane and I sit down. I look over my shoulder, and there's a picture of Proper Reality, a longtime old Friends resident. There's a great win photo of him winning the Arkansas Derby. And I told the waitress, I said, you know, that horse that we used to be at my farm, et cetera, et cetera. So now I'm handing out magazines to everybody in the pancake house and going crazy. And this woman comes over and she goes, Mrs. Wynn was my grandmother, the woman who owned them. So you never know. These horses take you places you never thought you'd go, for sure.
Well, and that town, I mean, you virtually everybody you bump into, I mean, is you know, one remove from ownership, or you know, something. There's complete immersion in the game at Hot Springs. I had David on Tuesday, coincidentally. He's got a feature in Harper's that you need to read. I'll send you the link.
Oh, great. Yeah, he's a wonderful writer. He really is.
No, he's a huge talent, and his interest in racing is a, you know, it's a credit to the game, and he's a fabulous resource. A couple of things too, Michael, and we'll work our way to the open house and everything else you've got scheduled coming up over the next, you know, 2 weeks plus. Talk about Medina Spirit being laid to rest and having basically a shrine to him, essentially, at the farm for people to visit.
Yeah, well, it began, Steve, with a woman named Charlotte Farmer. You may remember way back when they were going to pave over Noor's grave over out west and
yes.
Northern California. And she got incensed. And so she went to battle to make sure that they didn't do it. And she finally got to, after about a year of battling, she got to dig up whatever was left of Noor. And she put him in a box, in a big box, and put him in the back of her pickup truck and drove from Northern California to Old Friends, and we buried Noor here. Well, she called me right after Medina Spirit died, and she said, "Have you talked to him about the possibility of burying him at his ashes at Old Friends?" I said, "No, but that's a great idea, Charlotte. I'll call him." And I did, and I talked to Jill, and she thought it was a good idea, and she passed it along to the owners, and yeah, they, you know, they paid for the headstone, they paid for everything, and then Jill had the Derby blank at 147 roses in a blanket remade by the woman who makes the Derby blanket, so that was there. And you know, we had over 100 people in the rain, and it was very, very, very touching. And we buried them. We buried them right next to War Emblem and right next to Charismatic, so appropriate place for him. And his headstone's all black and shiny, just like him. In spite of what everybody thinks and how everybody feels about all the stuff that's been going on, it wasn't his fault. You know, he was an amazing racehorse. You know, and I remember Bob came to the farm. He always does the Thursday before the Derby, and I told him I was going to bet Medina Spirit since Caddo River had scratched and there's no more speed in the race. And I said, and he reminds me of War Emblem. And Bob says, "I wouldn't do that if I were you." I said, "You wouldn't? Why not?" He says, "Because he's like, there's three horses in the race that are better than him." And anyway, just how things work out, and he wins the race, and you know, everything that happened afterwards. Too bad, but he's
well,
there,
the
and
fact
people
that,
have come
have,
and donated flowers and visited, and that garden named after Nikki Bacharach, the daughter of Bert Bacharach, who owned Afternoon Delights, and Angie Dickinson has been a friend of ours for a long time. Their daughter Nikki, we named it after their daughter, and it looks really, really, really nice. And you walk around in there, and it's filled with a lot of really great memories.
Well, those that have never been, I mean, they certainly have heard you with me, and you really everywhere in and around racing venues. If you haven't been, a trip to Old Friends. If you're coming to Kentucky for, you know, this last second half, basically, of Keeneland. If you're coming for Derby Week and you haven't been, you have to make a plan. What is scheduled? Talk about the open house first, and then anything else that people need to know here over the next 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, Steve. Well, we've expanded, and sometime I'll come on and I'll tell you how money falls out of the sky for us. Because it's certainly not based on any ingenuity on my part. But we got the money, and we got the expanse, and now we have almost 300 acres. We have a facility at Ashton Grove, which was a senior citizen facility, a high-end senior citizen facility, and they had 42 acres of green space, and we have 18 horses over there. And then Old Friends, they just opened the Old Friends in Japan, and their logo's better than ours and all that, but it's a beautiful facility, and they've already retired a couple of horses to Old Friends Japan, and so all that stuff has been great. Our big party, our annual homecoming, which we haven't been able to do the last few years, obviously, because of the pandemic. We're having it this year, and it'll be the day after the Derby, as it always is. And I talked to Gary Stevens about coming back and making a celebration for Silver Charm, along with the others, but particularly Silver Charm, and celebrating its 25th anniversary. So it's kind of like Silver Charm's silver anniversary. And so he's going to come, and I'm very, very excited about that. And it's going to be a big party. We have a lot of art, really nice art of our horses and others, and a lot of other things that we're going to be able to auction off and raise some money. And Corey Johnson, who's on our board, he's spearheading a group to redo one of our barns, the old tobacco barn, and make it into an event center. So one of the things that we're really missing at the farm is a huge TV where people can watch that Dubai World Cup or watch Silver Charm's Derby and Preakness and Belmont and see some of these horses in action. And so we're going to rebuild it so that we'll be able to put those in there. It'll have restrooms, heat, air conditioning, other kinds of modern conveniences. So he's spearheading that, and we're really excited about being able to improve that facility and make it better for the visitors. And all Jack Knowlton comes. Jack, of course, runs Saratoga and had Funny Side and Tis the Law for his group, and he comes all the time. And oftentimes, the people who own the horses that win the Derby will be coerced into coming. So it's really, really good time. We get beer from Country Boy and my friend, and great barbecue from Proud Mary's, and it's really, really, really a lot of fun. People get to see each other. Most importantly, they get to see each other. They get to interact with the horses, and it's really a spectacular celebration that I've missed the last few years. And if they want tickets, if they want to make reservations, they just have to call the office at 502-863-1775 or check out our brand new website. We finally got the website going. Barbara Fossman works for us. She did a fabulous job revising and redoing the website, and it's all up. So now you can click on there, and you can click on any horse that's at Old Friends and get the page, and it's working so much better than it was before. So if you haven't visited the website in a while, just take a look at it, because I think they did an amazing job.
No, it looks terrific. And it's funny, yesterday we were on with Bill Gallo, the National Steeplechase. They completely reworked theirs as well, and there's actually kind of a similar presentation on the homepage. It's actually very similar with the gallery of photos that come across the screen, and a big kind of a banner photo. It looks great, and easy to navigate, easy to click on and donate, which we certainly have to always remind people that what Michael has done here has been remarkable, but not without the help of racing fans, owners, players, anything helps. I mean, literally, money to buy bags of carrots help. It goes a long way.
Yeah, it sure does, Stephen. I appreciate coming on the show. I mean, one of the things about going back and forth to Arkansas is I got to listen to your show all the time on the radio, and it really made the trip a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Well, I get those texts from you sometimes. I know you're listening, and actually Mig was listening on his way into Aqueduct, obviously, because he when you mentioned when you talked about Affirmed success, and he said went at Aqueduct when he was the favorite, and that's kind of funny.
Yeah, Richard's been great. There's so many people in racing that have been so great to us, and you start to scrape away a lot of the negative stuff, and it reveals itself to the great sport that it is. So,
well, I invite people to get a hold of Michael and make a plan to make it to Old Friends, and if you've never been, you're going to be just astounded, and you can go along with a tour. But you can also wander around, yourself. And if you want to spend you know, extended period with a favorite, with a favorite of yours that you know is there. Michael's happy to have you do it. When I've been, and of course he's gone now, but being able to stand there near Gulch, that for me was pretty special.
Gulch was the greatest. Gulch lasted longer than anybody else. He was 32. And Leroy Jolly used to come visit him all the time. And one day we were there standing looking at Gulch, and Leroy says, "Boy, this horse must be the toughest horse who ever lived." I said, "Leroy, what do you mean?" He goes, "Well, he survived me and Lucas."
Well, and for those who haven't...
Really
those
great
having,
to hear the,
yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, you know, that's one of the thrills for me is having people come here and tell stories. I mean, there's a guy named Chris Ashcroft who was the groom for Taylor Special, one of the first horses we ever got, and put Bill
sure.
Mott on the map, actually. And he sent us a box of stuff with every win picture that he'd saved over the years. He was his groom for a year and a half. And the saddle cloth from the Chaucer Cup. And I mean, you never know. The mail brings things. The people bring things. The people tell stories. And, you know, yesterday I had this wonderful group out on a tour that were all New York horse players going to Keeneland. I'm telling you, we had a blast. I didn't want them to leave because they were just telling the greatest stories about their bets and about the horses and about this. And they knew more about some of these horses than I did. It was really great. It's a great group of people that are involved in racing. It's really, really a great group. And if we can finally get the act together, it'll be better.
Michael, in total, because I'm just looking at you know at the satellite farms as well, and where some of the horses are spread out. How many total right now are under your care?
Very close to 300.
Wow.
You know, we have more stakes winners than any farm in history. It's just crazy. And the other thing is, the other thing we're doing, Steve, you know, we have the wonderful farm up at Cabin Creek that's named after Bobby Frankel. And Joanne Pepper and her husband Mark and all their volunteers do a great job. And that's, of course, where Zippy lives. But they're confined by trees and all kinds of other things for expansion. So we're working with Jack Knowlton and with Ed Mitson up there in Saratoga. Ed just bought some property up there, and we're going to try and put together a program where we can have an expanded presence up in Saratoga, where horses like King Creesa and Carafa and Lou Bosch and all these other great horses that won races in New York can be, and we're working with Ed to build it. And the property that he bought is like 82 acres, and it's only 15 minutes from downtown and about 12 minutes from the track. So we're working on expanding up there because, you know, we don't have the hard job like a lot of the other places do that retrain horses and have to do all that hard work. We just retire them. So the only way that we get more room for more horses is to either get more property and expand, or when a horse dies, we open up another spot. So that's what we're doing, and we really appreciate all the work that Ed and Jack Nolan are doing up in Saratoga for us.
Very nice. Well, first place to visit, oldfriendsequine.org. There's horses you haven't even realized that are now retired under Michael's care, including one of my favorites, Smooth Air, that's there. And, you know, there's all kinds of wonderful geldings that, you know, were around and people became fans of and players bet on regularly. And you might be surprised that a horse that is one of your all-time favorites is on hand at Old Friends. Michael, I will see you as early as, next week sometime. And I'll be over, probably come over to Keeneland at least once and heading over to Hillendale one day next week as well. So we will see you soon, and certainly Derby week as well.
Oh, I can't wait, Steve. Best of team, and thanks for everything.
Not at all. Michael Blowen, everybody. Oldfriendsequine.org. Start there and make your plan to go out to Georgetown if you've never been. And then there's people that have been literally going, you know, annually or, you know, multiple times a year. And, I mean, the list is really, it's really amazing. And there's horses I didn't even, hadn't even realized that have made their way, including, you know, some stallions. The way the whole thing started was, Michael's original concept was to have a farm, a showcase, potentially an attraction like this, for stallions that were taken out of service. And, you know, they're special, they have special requirements when you know, when a stallion gets to be 23, 24, you know, taken out of service, a lot of times even younger, depending on you know, motility and you know, how you know, how they're getting mares into foal. They need special attention. And that was Michael's original concept. And it just, you know, more and more people just kept, you know, reaching out and looking for a place, you know, where the public, you know, particularly could come and see them, because they, you know, especially if you had a star, for instance. I mean, they've got, you know, he's got Breeders' Cup winners that work all week, is there. The Pizza Man. How about the Pizza Man? Little Mike is there. You know, there, you won't believe it until actually you go through. I mean, obviously Silver Charm, he's the engine on the train. But there's so many. Sean Avery, a favorite. I'm in a Sean Avery win picture actually at Saratoga. From which way? What did he? Which the sprints did he win? I forget. But I got dragged into the win picture. Arson Squad. Game on, dude. Game on, dude. One of the big stars. Amazing. Bellamy Road just got there. I think. Early in the winter, retired stallion, perfect example. So, what Michael's done is amazing. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. In fact, it's 10 into hour two. Got to get Dick Powell in here. We'll talk to Dick. Of course, we don't have a backdrop of Happy Valley action, but that's all right. We have got Champions night that is coming up, and Saturday. So they just drew earlier this morning, and so we can take a look, and some big stars in the HKJC Galaxy on Saturday. Back after this, coming to you from Sanibel, where we continue to, Tina and I continue to not move from the beach. She's there early, and then I join her like at 12:30. And yeah, we keep saying, "Let's do this. Let's do." No, we're not doing anything. Do you want to go? You want to take one of those boats? No, we're not taking a boat. And we're doing lots of shell. I mean, the shells are literally rolling into my hand. You put your hand down as the surf comes up and goes out, and you pick up your hand, and there's, you know, three museum quality shells in your hand. It's crazy. Back after this.